All right. Looks like we're ready. How's everybody doing? Good. So now we're going to start with the most important question. Okay, you ready? What are these people looking at? I mean, this guy's like, hey, this is the best cat picture I've ever seen in my life. And this guy's, you know, I've seen better. And this guy's, wait, let me show you a different one, right? Is it the same slide at every session? You're only going to think of cat pictures from now on, and you've got like all the way till Friday, right? So my name is Seth Juarez. I work for DevExpress. I am the analytics program manager. Before that, I did research at the University of Utah on machine learning. And so it's one of the things I like. So we're going to talk about machine learning, but it's going to be a different, sort of a different approach to it because I want to talk to you about the architecture of machine learning, which means how should we think about it? And once you start to think about it a certain way, you'll see that using any tool, specifically the one we're going to focus on at the end is Azure, becomes a little bit more easy. So you'll see that. And it's not crazy rocket science. There are some slides with math, so forgive me if you don't like math. There's like one or two, not very many, okay? And so most of you can do like the Romans and put your thumbs, and I'll skip the slide, okay? We'll just skip it, okay? So let's see if this clicker works. This is the first slide they put on the thing. I wasn't supposed to show it, but it scared the whatever's out of me. So I am using all Office Online Clip Art for this presentation so that I don't infringe, because that I thought like they were going to come in the middle of the session and tackle me or something. Like, you shouldn't show that picture. So they're all Office Online pictures. So you'll see the quality right away. Okay, so focus on those. All right, so this is what we're going to do. Here's your first Office Online Clip Art picture. This is going to be a meat sandwich, beef. We're going to talk about data science in general. We'll talk about what machine learning is, and then we'll get into how to build models to do prediction. I'll show you the intuition behind it, and I'll show you some of the cool things that they can do just to give you a taste of what it is that they do. And then we'll wrap it up by showing how to sort of put this all together in a bow tie using Azure ML, which is already available and you can start to use online. I don't know how much it costs, so if you ask, don't ask me, because I'll be like, I don't know, I'm using the Azure free credit, which everyone should use. And I still haven't had to pay for it in all these years. Don't tell anybody, because maybe there's something going on that I don't know about. So this is our sandwich today that we're gonna be ingesting. So the word science is an interesting word, right? When someone says they have it down to a science, I don't think it means quite what they think it means, right? Science means I don't know. Let me try something. I still don't know. Let me try something again. I know a little bit more. And it's a lot of Wikipedia, trust me. That's what science is. I don't know what they did before Wikipedia, right? Science is really about trying stuff. And that's the key. And so the stuff I'm going to show you might not work. I've had people come up to me after machine learning talks and say, "Hey, Seth, I have a really good idea for machine learning. We could predict stock prices." I'm like, "Whoa, no one has ever thought of that." You have got to be the first guy that has ever approached me on it. Well, and so the thing is, about science, when we talk about data scientists, the reason why they have their special nice room and they get extra salary is because they're just trying stuff a lot. So now after this session, the door's closed, so no one will know. I know they're recording it, but don't mind that. You can now call yourselves data scientists after this session. Charge more salary and get the bigger room. I would go for it. So write that down, tell your boss, "I'm a data scientist." But the thing is, primarily, data science is about trying stuff until it works. In fact, on Azure ML, you'll see the way they name things, they're called experiments. And that's not a mistake. All right. So machine learning is this, and I don't like reading slides, so I'll tell you a story while you read slides. Imagine you work at a bank. Anyone work at a bank? Oh, okay, good. So imagine you're these people. Okay. All right, start there. And imagine one day the marketing person comes in and says, "Hey, we want to be able now to scan checks in." Every bank does it now, but imagine it was 1996, right? "We want to be able to scan checks." But we don't know if it's going to be upside down or right side up. Right? That's a problem. We want you to make an algorithm that makes sure the check is right side up. Okay? And imagine your bank is cheap and all they do is they have a big black stripe at the top. Is that a hard algorithm to do? No. If black stripe at the bottom, flip. I don't know what language this is, but follow with me, right? If black stripe at the bottom, flip. And you're like, okay, solved. But then the marketing guy comes in and says, hey, we have a really important customer, and he really wants a picture of his cat on the check. What happens to your algorithm? Well, again, you have to be like, if black stripe at bottom, flip, else if cat upside down. Again, pretend there's a language that does that. Flip. And then the marketing guy comes in the next day and says, we have a really good marketing idea. We're going to let people put any picture on the check. What do you have to do? Well, you have to write another if statement. You have to write another else statement. You have to start tweaking. Have you ever found yourself in an algorithm where if you change the number from 0.8 to 0.9, it magically seems to work a little bit better? Or you add another if statement, or you're always in there, like you don't know why, but you've got to change some number and somehow it magically works. Those types of algorithms are prime candidates for machine learning, right? Because you are trying to guess the pattern, but instead the machine should guess the pattern. Machine learning turns the whole notion of having a problem and formulating an algorithm to solve the problem to instead giving the machine the problem and let it figure out how to do it. That's machine learning in a nutshell. And there's certain problems that are prime candidates for these. Obviously, there's certain algorithms where you just need to write the algorithm, but there are others that are much more complex. Like, how do I detect fraud? How do I detect intrusions into my system? How do I know if the marketing guy is going to put another picture on the check? You see what I'm saying? And so instead of writing an algorithm, you give the machine examples of the right thing, lots of them, and then it figures out what the algorithm is. Does that make sense? That's machine learning. And so the most central issue in ML is generalizing stuff. You need to be able to generalize, and that's what it's all about. There's the office clip art for robots. And I added down there like the most egregious form of machine learning that has ever been purveyed. That's Clippy, if you guys, those that are a little bit younger. He pops up in my nightmares still. Can I help you with sleep? No, don't. All right, so there's two areas of machine learning. We're going to focus on the first in this session. There's supervised learning and unsupervised learning. Supervised learning is when you know the target of what you want to learn. You know exactly what you want to learn. Unsupervised learning is where you want to find general structure, right? That's a little bit better. If you have a lot of data and you want to compress it somehow, or you want to squeeze the good data juice, yeah, if you... No data juice? You don't like that term? I don't like it either, actually. Okay. So it's making sense of data. It's squeezing the best out of your data. That's unsupervised learning. Supervised learning is more structured. Unsupervised learning is less structured. Sometimes you can use both at the same time to build crazy things. And so that's the cool thing. This is probably one of the neatest applications. Anyone have one of these things? It's crazy, right? It sees your bones. It's really creepy. Sometimes if you're playing with a Kinect, which I have, there's like a phantom skeleton that comes up from behind. You're like, I don't know what that is, but there's nobody there. It's pretty scary. The way it works is it uses a simple decision, either forest or jungle, I don't recall, and the feature selection they use is so brilliant because it's so simple. And I'm going to show you that algorithm today in its simplified form. So this is an example of a supervised learning problem because the thing is detecting your hand. Is this a hand or not? Is this an elbow or not? Is this your knee or not? And so that's supervised, so it's a specific thing. A better example of unsupervised learning is this. This is my Netflix queue. Go ahead, it's okay. It's okay. Just let it out. I obviously do not own my Netflix queue, is apparent. Or maybe I do and I'm just weird. So you'll see here that recommendation engines happen to be a form of unsupervised learning where we learn to group people and things together. Do you see that? There's no answer. There's not like, hey, answer. Sorry, I couldn't come up with something fast enough. But you can see there's no answer. Instead, we're grouping people. And if you belong to a certain group, and this group likes this thing because they've rated it 5 stars, and the cumulative addition of all the stuff that they like, we'll just pick the one with the highest score. So in essence, when you go to Facebook or when you go to whatever and you like stuff or you put a star in something, you are feeding a ginormous machine learning algorithm. You should go on Facebook and dislike everything to screw with you and your friends. Right? Because everything you like, they like too. The machine thinks, so just like all the weirdest stuff. And then they'll get weird ads in their page. It's hilarious. You should try it. So that's an example of unsupervised learning. All right. There's other applications. I actually started research in machine translation. Have you guys ever done Google Translate? How many of you think it works real good? He's like, the one guy is like, I do. I think it's great. Thank you, the one guy. Because you know how hard it is to do that? We can't even figure out how to talk in one language. And then the other people don't even know how to talk in their language. And somehow the computers will be like, I know what that means, and then translate. When I worked on this problem, can you imagine? There are so many NP-complete problems that are being approximated just in the translation alone. And the magic that happens is just amazing. I actually had to back off. This was so hard. I went to general machine learning. It's just too hard. I'm not that smart. Well, maybe a little. My mom tells me I am. There's others like natural language processing, biology, medicine. For example, imagine being able to give a patient they have a certain diagnosis, right? The machine can say, you know what? You've given me 1,000 different factors. I've learned that it's perhaps this. And the doctor can go in there and verify. You see what I'm saying? It's just amazing what you can do. That's an example of a predictive system for supervised learning. All right. So, any questions? No, we're good? Okay. All right. So we're going to talk about making decisions. By the way, office clip art is fantastic. This is just getting better as we go. Let's talk about supervised learning. That's what we're doing this time. Supervised learning is what we're going to focus on. Unsupervised learning we can do some other time. In fact, if you go online to InfoQ, there's an unsupervised learning talk I do on InfoQ.com. And so you can watch that if you want to see me there or not. I mean, if I scare you. There's 3 different kinds of decisions that we make in supervised learning. There's others, but these are the basic ones. The first is binary classification. Remember, we're in supervised learning, so we're learning a specific thing. So do you want to learn yes or no? 1 or 0? Male or female? Multi-class classification is when you want to learn from a set of finite things. Okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, A, B, C, D, 1, 2, whatever. Teacher, student, secretary. And regression you've heard of is any real number or any subset of the real numbers. All right? We're going to focus on binary classification here. So, question for you, and I'll warn you, I used to teach high school, so awkward silence is only awkward for you, okay? If I have a binary classifier, how do I make a multi-class classifier? I want you to... Boy, you feel that? It feels good, huh? What's that? Combine them. Absolutely. There's a number of ways to combine them, right? You can say, okay, I'm going to have a decision between A and B, A and C, A and D, A and F, B, C, B, D, B, F, C, D, C, F. And whichever one has the highest score, we're going to decide that. Right? That's called an all versus all multi-class classifier that bootstraps binary classifiers. Right? You can also say, is it A or something else? Is it B or something else? Do you see how you're learning 2 things, but you have a lot of them? With those things, you can bootstrap a multi-class classifier, and that's called a one versus all classifier. Remember that, because you're going to see that in Azure. And then the last one I'm not going to focus on, because, I mean, least squares fit kind of stuff, Taylor approximations, you remember that stuff. But we're not going to talk about that. So let's talk about the architecture. 4 things every time, and I'm going to repeat this like 4 times. Wow. Right? This is going to be repeated a lot. So remember, this is the way machine learning problems happen, specifically when you're working with the prediction problem. The first is you always, 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 always start with your data. Always. Okay? The second is you have to do stuff with your data. Okay, I'm going to talk about this more specifically. You have to clean, transform, maths. Apparently in the United States, we only have one math. Everywhere else in the world, it's called maths. There's like some secret extra you guys have that I have not learned about. So if one of you can pull me aside and be like, hey, this is it right here, just tell me, right? Everyone else in the world calls it maths, am I right? Right, except for in the United States, because apparently we only have one. Then when you go to the next thing, is once you have your data in a specific form where your models can accept it, then you generate these models to do prediction. That's the architecture. You start with your data, you do some transformation, you do some modeling, you do predictions. Right? And the process of modeling, there's some testing involved, right? Because we always test stuff. We're programmers. After all, well, I don't know if all of you are programmers, but you probably know programmers. You know what I'm saying? So always test stuff, and I'll show you how that works. All right, so let's go with data, clean, data, clean, model, predict. Okay, so we'll start with the data. This is what data looks like. Imagine you work at a tennis court place, and you want to be able to predict if people will play or not so that you can adequately staff your place. Right, you see what I'm saying? Anyone work at a tennis place? All the bankers are raising their hand. So. All right, so here's the example. You have what's called a label. The label is the thing you want to learn. In this case, it's called class over here. And this is the label, whether we play or we don't. Then you have these things called features, the things that you will use to make prediction. In this case, it'll be outlook, temperature, and whether it's windy or not. So imagine label and features as a class, an object, well, not an object, but a class, a definition. Your object would be the instances of your features and values. I'm sorry, the instances of your feature and label. That's what that is. The supervised learning problem is this. If you have a labeled data set of XY pairs given a new X, how do we predict Y? That's it. Does that make sense? It's pretty simple. That's the problem. And there's a number of ways to solve this and to do this. I'll show you probably three or four if we can get to all of them. But there's a specific way to do that. Now notice that I have big X, big Y, because that represents a set of things. Little X and little Y is just one example. So we give the machine all of this thing, and then we tell it to make a model from that, and then we give it this in order to predict. What do you think? Should they play or not? Are they going to play or not? Play, okay. Guessing play, okay. I don't know. I just wanted you guys to feel weird a little bit for a second. Keep you engaged because it's after 5, and usually in Spain we're just waking up from our naps. And so be ready. All right, so that's the data. The reality of the matter is that your data actually looks like this. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you get it, and you're like, wait, I really wanted this. You get this, right? That's what your data scientists are doing all day, is fixing data, right? We need to clean up data. We need to convert we need to convert it to modelable form, usually linear algebra. There's a specific computer science term for this. It's called yak shaving. If you have a data scientist in your office, go ask them about yak shaving and what is it they do all day. Usually it's make sure all the data looks good. By the way, Office Online did not disappoint with the yak in this case, okay? And then also you have to sort of convert it to something. From here on out, we're going to pretend that all of our data looks like that. Numbers, okay? Let's pretend we've gone from the step of where it's numbers. And so the models I'm going to talk to you about, I'm going to ignore the fact that they look like strings or they're, you know what I'm saying? It's all numbers after that. And it's primarily linear algebra. Do you guys remember taking linear algebra in the university? I thought it was the worst class ever. I was like, this is ridiculous. And on top of that, I have to write Fortran. Yeah, some of you guys don't even know what that is. I didn't know what it was. But it turns out that almost everything in machine learning is linear algebra. I felt a little bad when I went to graduate school, and that's the fact of the matter. We're not going to get into the hard stuff. You'll remember the stuff. It's not the hard stuff at all. All right, so then you need to make a model, right? Here's an example of a model, right, that the computer came up with to make a decision on whether or not they're going to play. And so in the case of the last one, you can see that if we give it this, in fact, the prediction stage, right, if we give it this, the outlook is sunny. So I always like the laser. I use it a lot. So the outlook is sunny. The temperature is low. We should play. Right, and that's really easy. The idea is that training the models might take a long time, but doing prediction takes no time at all. Right? Notice how fast you can predict in a tree-like structure like this. It's very fast. Making the models might take all weekend, and that's okay. You can, when you go on Friday, you can just say go, and the computer will work all weekend, not complain. I have not had one complain to me yet. That's not true. Maybe I'll leave that for another time. And the idea is that once you have a model, you can do prediction. Again, you start with your data. You do some cleansing of your data. You make a model. You do prediction. Those are the four things. All right, so now we're going to get into, because everything else makes sense, right? The yak shaving part makes sense, right? That's easy. Once you have a model, it makes sense, right? That part. But making the models, that's where sort of the voodoo data science magic happens, okay? And that's what I'm going to focus on for a little bit, so that when you're using Azure ML, you don't just go there and like, I don't, because when I opened it the first time, I looked at it, I'm like, nobody's going to know what to drag on or do anything, but you guys will. And so that's the cool thing. All right. I know, they keep getting better. So the idea is we need to have a way to separate things. We have, because remember, we're going to assume now that, my computer fell asleep. We're going to assume now that we have a binary classifier that can solve multi-class. Regression I'm going to leave for some other time. So let me log in here. Okay. So we need to have a way to separate stuff. We need to have what's called a decision boundary. So I am going to, all right, let's see. I want to go to number 6. So we're going to go to an example here that I think is easy. Okay, this is our machine learning problem today. How many features do we have? One, right? A, one. One, right? Because it's one column. We might have a lot of instances of it, and that's okay. The label, what kind of learning problem is it? Binary classifier, right? Because we're learning between yes and no. Okay? How would you go about making an algorithm to solve this problem? In other words, given a new X, which would be a number, how do we output true or false? What would you do? We're all friends here. It's okay. Don't be nervous. You're not going to say anything dumb unless you do. In that case, we'll all laugh at you. It'll be horrible. You'll cry. I'm just kidding. I would never do that. Yes?
Maybe there's one feature instance where all labels are true or false.
Okay. So do a search. I like it. Anything else? See how friendly I was? Come on. Correlation coefficient? Okay, now we're getting a little mathy. Slow down, tiger. No, yeah, there's certain mathematical things that you can do. For example, maybe look at the average and see where it falls on the average. Yes? Remove the duplicates? Okay, I like that. Notice that what you're doing is you're trying to find a pattern. Here, let me show you my machine learning algorithm. You ready? I'm going to go to data, and then I'm going to sort by column A. What? It's return X less than 6, right? That's it. Right, notice in this case, this simple machine learning algorithm, I say machine learning algorithm, you guys are like, this can't be, it is, right? It fulfills the requirements of prediction, is X, return X less than 6. So if you give it a value 5, then it's going to return true. If you would give it a value 6, it's going to return false. What if you give it 5.5? No, I don't know. I don't know. All right? But notice that in this case, we're working with a single line of points, right? Remember, we've moved over, and now we're only using numbers. So we're using a single line of points, right? 0 all the way at the left, infinity all the way at the right, or maybe minus infinity. And it turns out that along this line, there's a certain point that divides the space into true and false. Right? This is not always the case, but we're gonna pretend that we're working with the nice case. So what does that look like when we have two dimensions? All right, let's go there. Two dimensions. Don't save. In two dimensions, if we want to do a separation, what do we use to separate? Remember, in a single dimension, we use the single point. In two dimensions, we use rhymes with ein. Starts with L. Yeah, thank you. A line. Yes, well done. That's right. We make a line. What if you're... Sorry. You can tell I taught teenagers, can't you? Sorry about that. What if you're in three space? Now think in three space, imagine you had red and blue balls floating in the air here. How would you separate it? Well, you'd pull a sheet up, right, which is called a plane. What if you're in four space? Well, it's called a cube. Five space, hypercube. Six space, hypercube. And then they kind of ran out of stuff, and so it's hypercube all the way down. Right? But notice that, in essence, what you're doing is you're finding a way to separate stuff into one or the other, mathematically. And there's this very special algorithm that was developed with this simple idea of sorting, or simple idea of following a line. And that algorithm is called, you won't believe it, it's really good. Well, I'm not going to tell you yet, because I got to tell you how you develop it. Sorry, I forgot the order of my slides. You'll forgive me, of course. How do you do this? Well, you guys remember the dot product? Simple. You have two vectors, right? You multiply the first things, add them to the multiplication of the second thing. There happens to be another relationship, which is the magnitude of the first multiplied by the magnitude of the second multiplied by the cosine of the angle between them. You remember that the cosine of something always equals 0. That would be 90 degrees, pi over 2, if I remember correctly. So it turns out that with one vector, every other vector that's perpendicular to it forms a line. So you can do that. So now with one single vector, we'll call it W, we can form a separator for a space into two. I'll show you how that works. It's called perceptron, and you can tell this was invented in 1956 because it sounds like some kind of refrigerator, I think. Office clip art, isn't that? Right? And the way it works is you start with a line, and you go through every point and move the line until it fits. Okay, let me show you what that looks like when you are doing it in real life. So here it is. Is it showing up? Yes. So I am going to just go ahead, and the computer is going to say, all right, let me look at every point the best I can. And I'm going to find the best separator. And it keeps going until it finds the best separator. Now, is this data perfectly separable? No, but I mean, we're making guesses, right? We're going to do the best we can. In this case, this is the best line. Is it pretty good? Yeah, right? If for those of you that are math wonks, this is called typical gradient descent optimization methodology. You just go through every point and go down and find the optimum. Do you remember calculus? When you want to find the optimum, take the first derivative, set equal to 0. That's this kind of stuff. But notice it goes and it finds the right line. And now it can separate between blue and red. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so now I am going to show you this. Well, no, let me go back and make sure that I don't forget what my slides are. So let me do the demo here. So here's an example of some student data that I have. Right? How many features? In this case, we're trying to learn good. So good is the label. I'll give you that. So we have 6 features. Well, in this case, I'm ignoring name because I think it's noise. So we have 5 features, and we're trying to predict whether a student is good or not based upon how many friends they have. This is horrible. I don't know why I even came up with this, actually. I don't even want to show it. And so now what we're going to do, right, is the computer is going to go through all the students and try to make this hypercube around to separate the good and the bad students. So I'm going to let this run for a while. Okay, it's done. I'm going to normalize it so the numbers are a little bit more interesting. Even if it doesn't work, right? Because it might not. Notice that these coefficients are interesting. And I'll tell you why. Because how does it know what side of the line it's on? Well, I told you that if the dot product of one vector, which represents a feature, a vector is a student, the W is the thing we learned, right? If the dot product is zero, it means that it's on the line. So we don't know. So you flip a coin. There's another interesting thing. If the dot product is less than zero, it's on one side. If it's greater than zero, it's on the other side. So prediction, really, once you learn this W, is you get this W in, you get a new student, you do the dot product, and you see, is it positive or negative? And then you assign the label based on positive or negative. Super simple, right? But look at this. In this case, by the way, you'll notice that the math it does, it's irrespective of label. Because, for example, I think I had an enum, and good was like zero, and bad was one. And so the numbers might be reversed, so don't pay attention to that. But notice that there is a number in there that is the most indicative of a negative number, right? Because you're taking two numbers, multiplying them, and then coming out with the dot product. So which is the highest feature that has the highest impression on the actual prediction? Well, great, right? Because when you multiply whatever grade comes in, you're going to multiply it times 0.14, which is going to make it more negative. So let's put something in there. So we're going to say the GPA is 1.2 because not super smart, 1. And then there you go. And we're going to say that Jens is not tall. So it looks like Jens is good. Let's change the grade now to F. Looks like Jens is not, you see that? It's a little small. Looks like Jens is not good. And you can see the calculations that are happening here, right? It dot products them together, comes up with the sum, and then if it's positive or negative, comes out with the answer. So simple. Do you see that? And that's an example of a machine learning algorithm called the perceptron. It was invented in 1957 by a gentleman by the name of Frank Rosenblatt. And I already did the demo, so thank you, slides, for reminding me in the fridge. So another way to think about the perceptron is this. Super, super simple. You get a new example. You convert that example to the numbers. You put those in. You multiply and add, and then positive or negative, right? You also add this thing called the bias term. Just think, remember lines before? You had y equals mx plus b, and the b was to move it off of the origin. That's what the b is for, more or less, right? So you have the numerical features, you do the dot product on the learned vector, and you look for plus or minus 1, and that's how you predict, right? Super, super, super simple model. Because remember at the beginning, we looked at the sorting, and you thought that's bogus, right? You're learning a linear separator because of a single point. Here you're learning a linear separator, but it just so happens that there's more features, and the computer does not even care, seriously, how many features you give it. It doesn't. Well, that's not true. It depends on your memory space and your computational power. But then that goes away when you have Azure, right? Okay, so that's nice. But what if you have this? What line separates that space? I don't know if that's part of the hidden maths in Europe, that circle equals line. Sorry, that was rude. That was way rude. I'm sorry. Everyone always says, circle. There is no line that separates that. Isn't there? There isn't. So what do? Well, you have two options, and I'll show you what they are. The first one is called the kernel method. So I'll show you this. So let me open this cool shell that I built, and let me go Python. We're going Python, people. I don't know if I'm allowed. If the Microsoft guy jumps and kills me, he's okay. He's okay with it. Thank goodness. I got a little scared there for a second. By the way, is the font big enough? All right. Example graph 2. This looks similar, right, to the problem we had before, right? These numbers were generated normally at random and then offset so that they can be separated. Well, so that they had the little center in the middle. Okay, so again, there's no line that separates these points, right? No line. So what do? Well, we can cheat. How about we separate? How about we change the space? We'll project this into a brand new space. And this is how we'll do it. We'll take all the x's and change them to x squareds. We'll take all the y's and change them to y squareds. And then we'll make a new z, which is x times y. So now we'll have x, y, z, which means that from 2 space, we're going to 3. Did you guys just take a siesta too? Ah, 3 space, right? We go from 2 to 3 space. So imagine what that looks like. Imagine the x and the y's close in there when you square them. When you square x and y, you're sort of going to blow it up a little bit. And then when you multiply, the numbers in the middle are going to be smaller when you multiply them together and larger as you go out. Well, let's not imagine it, right? Let's look at it. I'm going to click this thing right here, and booyah! That's an official computer science term that I use, right? Is that linearly separable? Yes, it is, with a plane. Imagine you're on your bed tonight and you spill your drink because it's a really good show, I don't know. And you want to clean it up the best way possible. So you pick the sheet up and you just cut it. Isn't that what we just did? What happens when you drop the sheet down? What shape is left? What? Yeah, circle. That's weird. It turns out that once you change the space, these things can potentially become linearly separable. This is the foundation of what are called kernel methods. Right? These are called kernel methods. If you cannot do perceptron in the original space, then let's project into the new space and see if we can find a linear separator. Okay? But here's the problem, right? Well, let's look at this. So in this case, it's like a perceptron all over again, except now we're looking at the outlook temperature, windy, outlook types out. You see what I'm saying? Because we have to sort of multiply them all together and then come up with new features. The problem is we start to get a lot of features, right? When we have 3, we go to 9. When we have 4, we go to this thing. 2 times 4 is 8, plus 4 times 3 is 12, over 2 is 6, so 8 plus 12 is... I'm not good at that kind of math. So it's 8 plus 12, right? When you go to 5, do you see what I'm saying? You start to get this feature problem. It just blows up. And I tell you, the problems that I worked on regularly have anywhere from 1,000 to 15,000 features. Yikes. So we're looking order n squared from features to projection. But there's a magic that happens, and here's the math slides, okay? I don't want you to worry about what it means, but I want to tell you the important bits. It turns out that the best line that you can find is the one that separates the space the most. So imagine the point furthest away from the lines on both sides, we want to maximize that space. And the way that mathematicians have found a way to do that is to minimize the weight vector W subject to these conditions. And let me explain these conditions, because you'll see what this condition means right away. Remember, I can't zoom in here. I'll have to use the laser. So remember, Y is the right answer. It's going to be positive or negative, right? Y is the right answer. We convert it to positive or negative. W is the thing we learned. X is the thing that we've gotten, the new example, and B is just a bias term. So when W times X is negative, that means we're assigning it to the negative class. When it's positive, it means we're assigning it to the positive class. Now, this is the truth. If the answer is negative, and if we guess negative and the answer is negative, that is going to be positive. So we got it right. If the answer is positive and we guess positive, it's going to be positive. But if any of these are off, the answer is going to be negative, which means we made a bad guess. So what we want to do is we want to minimize this W and the B, which is sort of hidden in there, subject to this condition, which really means This means minimize this to get the right answer. That's all that means. Now, there's a little math that happens when you do optimization. Those of you that know this stuff, you have to do calculus, add Lagrangian variables, and then do some math. Now, the thing is, I don't want you to focus on that necessarily, but the thing that is important is that the thing that relates to the thing that's under study is this, right? Do you see X? X transpose X is another way of saying dot product. Do you know that? So when you make a function to do dot product, it's just that K. Now, here's the magic. The algorithm does not care about anything other than I want to know the dot products between all your things. So why not just do this? Why not just store it? Well, just to remind you, remember the Frank Rosenblatt is the dot product, that's the important thing. Why not just do this? Let's just store all the dot products of all of your x's in this big matrix. Because if you don't use the term matrix as a data scientist, people will not pay you more money. I think that's the idea, right? And so store this. So this here represents the dot product of x0 and of x0 times itself. This is x0 times x1, right? So you just store it in this big matrix, which means that when you're finding the best solution, once you go over to this new space, you don't actually have to expand the features. Do you remember the problem? When we had 3, we went to 9. When we had 4, we went to 12 plus 8. I just can't wait, 20. Right? 20. Now we don't have to actually expand the features out. Now you can just store this in a matrix. And for those that love linear algebra, this matrix is symmetric, positive, definite, which means you can do all sorts of magical math stuff. This is called the kernel trick. It's really that one weird trick on those links that you see. You ever see links on your? Yeah, this is the real one weird trick. I need to make a link like that. It turns out that it's called the kernel matrix, and it's called the kernel trick, which means that you can expand into this new space without necessarily expanding out the features because you're storing the dot product in there. Now, here's the crazy part, right? This is the basis for things called support vector machines. You've heard of these, probably. This is the basis for support vector machines. Because what's happening is the algorithm, once it runs, instead of producing a line, it tells you where it's made the most mistakes, and then it stores them there. Let me show you what that looks like. So I'm going to animate here. So now it's using the same kernel that we did before, which is it's called the polynomial kernel. Now it's not going to learn a line. It's going to learn the stuff around the edges. And now you just take the dot product of, well, you just multiply all the things together, and then cumulatively it will tell you, are you in or are you out? Support vector machines, the optimization problem, makes it so that it learns the things along the edges so that you don't have to go into the new space. So now we can calculate in a finite way this tremendously large expansion. That's kernel methods. Now, here's the crazy part. Let me go to the PowerPoints here. Here's the crazy part. This is the thing that we just did. It's called a polynomial kernel of degree 2. That's when we pulled the sheet up and hacked it off. This thing is called an RBF kernel. When sigma equals 1, we are actually projecting into infinite dimensional space. Yeah. And then you're finding a linear separator in infinite dimensional space. Remember though, you don't have to actually expand out the thing because you're actually using the kernel matrix to store the dot products, right? The day I understood this is, I was actually explaining this to a student because I was a TA, and it just, the day it dawned on me, I was like, this is craziness. The other thing, for those that like math, is this function is convex, which means there is an exact mathematical answer. It doesn't mean it's the right one, but it means it's the only best one. Can't say the same thing about neural networks, right? And that's where we're going next. Well, what if that doesn't work? Well, then we need to start changing the function. Okay, and that's what we got to do. So you recall, I know these get better. You recall, this is a neural network. Have you seen these before? You've probably seen these, and I'm going to explain to you what they mean, because I don't think they're explained very well, to be quite honest. They just happen to be a perceptron. Well, in this case, they're 3. Remember that perceptron picture we had before? So they're just 3 of them. That's all they are. And that's the unfortunate thing. In this case, there's one hidden layer. When there's more hidden layers, it's more complex. But if you think about it as a perceptron, it makes sense. Because if we change the space and there's still no linear separator, we need to change the function, but only a little bit. So what you do is you introduce these sort of hidden layers where each one represents. So imagine H1 is like, should we play or not? Right? But it's going to come up with a number that's between negative and positive infinity. But what you do is you dampen it a little bit with the function. The function is called a sigmoidal function. It actually doesn't matter as long as it's differentiable. But notice that this neural network is literally a combination of perceptrons. That's all it is. It's not anything more than that. And what you do is to optimize it. This particular function is not convex, so there's not a best approximation. But in essence, you're taking a linear function, putting it into another function, and then outputting something else. And you're doing this in aggregation a lot. That's neural networks. It works pretty good, too. So I'm not going to explain more on this because the actual optimization problem is a little hairy. There's a couple of strategies to do it. One of them is called backprop. Another one's there's genetic methods that I'm not going to talk about. So, all right. So we talked about linear methods, right? This is what we talked about. And I motivated probably three of the more interesting machine learning algorithms. The first one was perceptron. And then what if we can't make a line? Then we change the space, use SVM. And if we can't change the space, it doesn't do anything, we change the function. Do you see how this is starting to feel a little sciencey? Which one should you try? Whichever is science. Just keep trying stuff, right? That's why they gave you a better salary and a nicer office, right? You got to try them all because sometimes they might not work. And the cool thing about machine learning on Azure, it lets you try them all at once without any memory or computational constraints. Seriously, when I heard about this, I was so excited. All right. So let's talk about the last one, the last model, and then we'll get into some how to do this normally. Someone asked me how to do it locally because there's some organizations, particularly in the financial sector, that don't want to push their data up to Azure. I've heard this, and so that's okay too. I don't know if they're going to solve that, but there's other ways to do that. So let's talk about decision trees here. Happy Halloween. Remember we did this at the beginning? This is probably one of the more intuitive models that I've seen, at least, because it shows you directly what the trees look like. Okay, this one makes perfect sense. So how does one make these? Well, we're going to have to use a little math, and that's okay. There's this thing called entropy, and it's this thing by Claude Shannon. You remember the guy, the information theory guy? Entropy measures the disorganization of a particular set of things. How disorganized is it? It's just a disorganization. Information gain says, okay, if I have this thing, how disorganized is it? And then you find out. If I know this thing, does this thing make this less disorganized? You see what I'm saying? So this is organized. This is something else. If I know this, does this make this less disorganized? And that's what information gain tells you. H of Y tells you how messy is the thing we're learning, which in this case is should we play or not. And this H Y given A is how messy is the answer if we know A. Now, if we know A, and the value of H of Y given A is the same as the value of H of Y, that means knowing A doesn't tell us anything. And so the information gain will be zero, right? If the messiness of Y completely disappears because we know A, and what I mean by knowing A is I mean we take a chunk where A, we take the A chunk where all these are like this, the A chunk where we sort of chunk them all out, and is the answer messy in aggregate when we take the chunks out, right? That's what tells us how we should split columns. So let me show you what that looks like here. We're going to go to number 6. Uh-oh, screensaver. Whew, got it out just in time. All right, so we're going to go to decision tree. So here is the same thing we had before, outlook, temperature, windy, or play. So notice that here is the information gain of outlook, right? So here's H of play given H of play given outlook. You can see it's like a logarithmic based thing. It's like B log B times whatever. I don't remember, to be honest. but it's a, something you can actually calculate. Notice that there it turns out to be 0.3601. Okay, well, what's the other one like? Let's go to the other one. So we're going to say, okay, let's measure temperature. In this case, it's 0.15. And then we're going to go to windy. In this case, it's 0.04. So it looks like the winner is outlook. And let me show you how we know this. When I do this, notice that the, let me go to outlook again. Notice that here, when we take out outcast, how much entropy is there in Y now? Well, there's none, right? Because we know they're all play. So when we know outcast and we take that whole section out, Y now is completely unmessed up. You see that? That's what information gain really means, okay? And so now when we build a tree, you keep doing this recursively until there's a tree. And what I mean by that is now we find the best one, we split. Then with the remaining features, you find the best one, you split. And you do this recursively until either you want a particular depth. So for example, say you have a lot of features, you might just say we're going to limit the depth to 100, which means that once you get to the leaf, you just pick the mode of the answer, right? And that, the one that has the most in there, right? So you don't have to actually expand the whole thing out at all. Someone once, I gave this talk in Michigan once, and they're like, what happens if you click on something? I said, that's a good question. So now when I change this, notice the tree changes a little bit. You see that? It's very fast. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, if I go like this, right? Right? It's pretty smart because there's no entropy in the answer now, right? Don't play. Right? Is Seth going to wake up late? Hold on. Let's see if this algorithm works here. Yeah, it looks like I am tomorrow going to wake up late. And so you see, in essence, what the decision tree algorithm is, it's recursively finding the best way to make a decision, right? And it starts at the top with the one that gives you the best information gain and recursively picks off the remainder. There's another thing. For example, you can do a linear combination of decision trees. That's called a decision forest. You can also do a linear combination of decision trees that loop back on themselves. Those are called decision jungles. And the reason why I bring this up is because they're in machine learning on Azure. All right, so we did that. Let me go back to the PowerPoint. I did that. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, so I showed you three of the four if you count Perceptron. I showed you four of the more popular machine learning algorithms, right? Perceptron, support vector machines, neural networks, and decision trees. Intuitively, we need to understand at least a little of what they're doing if we're going to have any success architecting predictive algorithms, or using them at least. Okay, and so that's why I wanted to show them to you, so that we understand. Because it's not black magic. It is when you get back to your boss and you're like, hey, Leslie, I'm a data scientist now, so pony up. Right. So make it black magic then, but not here. Okay, so do they work? That's a really good question. Do they work, right? Because the models that are built are using math, and they're doing the best that they can, right? And so the way that you do it is you kind of have to test them. And the way you test them is you split your data up initially. You have to split it up. And so when you have all of your data, what you do is, I don't know what the number is, I'll just give you numbers. You take 80% of your set of data to build the models, and the remaining 20% to see how well it did. And what you can do is you can even chunk it out into 20% segments and give it these, I guess it would be there's five. So you give it these four 20%ers, test it on the 20, then give it the other. You see what I'm saying? That's how you test these models to make sure they're good, because then you come to a problem that's called overfitting. And overfitting is when your model works really well on your data. It works on my machine problem. You can't have that, right? Specifically, there's certain machine learning algorithms that are so important. Like, imagine a diagnosing application that diagnoses illnesses. You gotta test this stuff, and this is how you do it. Okay, any questions? All right, I have some time here. So now we're gonna power through this on Azure here, and I'm gonna show you how it goes. Now, here's the thing. I have to tell you in advance that sometimes these things take a little bit to run. Okay, so you got to get some questions here punted up, or we're just going to sit here awkwardly. Well, mostly you, right? We're going to sit here awkwardly waiting for the thing to finish. They take anywhere from 30 to maybe 70 seconds. Okay? We okay with that? Okay. All right. All right, so let's go to Azure here, and let's bring it up. So if you go to Azure, they have like 100 million things that you can do now. It's pretty fantastic. And I will tell you that Microsoft's Play is so important nowadays. Think about this, right? Do you really want to pay for your OS on your machine? Well, no, they're giving away the Windows Phone one now, right? Apple gives away theirs. Where is the real OS now when you're talking about devices? Well, it's in the cloud. I'm not trying to get all markety, right? Because everyone's like, go to the cloud. Nobody knows what that means. But if you think about it, you have everything here that represents pieces of an OS, like a bus, right? Like a network, like storage, like automation, a scheduler. This is an OS in the cloud. It really is. And now they've added this thing, machine learning, where you can do stuff that your OS could have never imagined to do on its own. It's sort of just built in there. And if you think about it, why charge for an OS every 2 years when you can charge for it every month? What? It's smart. I think it's really smart. So let's go over here, and let me show you how to create a machine learning workspace. So over here, you click on machine learning. I already have two workspaces. You can see them here. One is called Playground, one is called Robots. We're going to work in the Robots space. To make one, you just click New, right? And you do Quick Create. There's two things that you have to do, right? There is a workspace name to do your experiments, and then you also have to have a storage account where it's going to do like a scratch space for data, right? You see what I'm saying? So those are the two things. So I make new storage accounts for whenever I make a new workspace. I already made one, so I'm just going to go to the robots space here. And then you can do a couple of things, which is kind of cool. I'll talk about one and two. Three, I'll talk about more at the end so you can see what it means. So ML Studio is where you do the experiments. Manage access is where you can allow others to do experiments with you. It's kind of cool. And so that's the cool part. All right. All right, so let me go to sign in to ML Studio. It's going to open up this fancy thing here to do the experiments. Hopefully the Wi-Fi holds up. If it doesn't, I'm going to have to do like interpretive dance, so stay for that if you want. I don't have any experiments, but you notice here to the left, you have the actual home, which has a series of videos that are there to help you, and then you have experiments, which is where you do sort of the beef of what we were talking about. And then you have the web services and settings over here. So what we're going to do is we're going to make a new experiment. And I'm going to go to experiment, and I am going to change the name of it to, is it hard to see? It feels like it's a little hard to see. It's not hard to see, is it? Okay, I'm going to change this to income prediction. And this is going to be an experiment. Okay. So remember, what are the four steps? First, rhymes with Ada. He was on Star Trek. Data, yes, one of my favorite characters, thank you. Then you have to do some cleaning. Then you get to make the model, and then you get to predict. No different here. Same thing. Okay? So how do you get data? Well, there's a number of ways to do it. You can primarily, you do have to have it on Azure, or you have to have it in a place that is reachable. So I'm going to show you the generic way of getting data, and then I'm going to use these saved data sets, which are really cool. So I'm going to go data input and output, and I'm going to drag this reader thing on here. This reader thing, let me move it over so we can see what you can do with it, lets you pull stuff from these things. Alternatively, you can just upload a CSV of your data too. You can do that as well and have a saved data set. But notice, this is pretty cool. I've seen examples where someone put a CSV at an HTTP endpoint and it just pulled it in. Right? Or for example, what if you want to do intrusion detection or prediction on intrusions? You have log data just being pushed out of your Azure websites, right? Use that. You can totally do that. Right? Now you're like, oh, yeah, there's stuff I can do. Yeah, so that's the reader that lets you do that. I'm not going to use the reader because I'm going to use an existing data set. So I'm going to go over here to save data sets, and I'm going to use the adult this thing. This is the adult income binary classification data set. So what does it have? Let's see if we can't take a look. So I'm going to right click here, and I'm going to go to visualize so you can take a look at what's in there. And the cool thing is that it lets you, because now that we have our data, what do we have to do now? Got to clean it up a little bit. Right, and on Azure you can do that because we just pulled the data raw, and now we got to do some cleansing. And so let's take a look at some of this data. So I'm going to go to this FNLWGT. Notice that the majority of the values are concentrated here, so I am going to ignore this. Right, now we're doing the sciencey part, right, where we're trying to figure out what we're going to use, how we're going to make the experiments work. Okay, let's take a look at, native country, okay? Looks like everyone is in the United States. So this part of the machine learning problem is called feature selection, right? The problem is we're trying to predict if someone's income is less than or greater than or equal to 50K. Let me go there because I think I glossed over that. I don't want to do that. This is what we want to predict. We want to predict what someone's income might be based upon certain features. We don't know what the features are. Right? Notice that the income is either less than 50K or greater than or equal to 50K. So in the example of intrusion detection, right, you would have to take your log data. This is the yak shaving. And for every entry in your log, you got to write whether this was an intrusion or not. That's the yak shaving part. Yeah, and in this case, we have to go through and see, is there something in the log that we don't want to use to do the prediction? So that's what I'm doing. And so the cool thing about this is you can go in there, you can take a look at some data. So it looks like I got native country here. And then you can actually compare it to other things, right? And so that's us trying to figure out what features we're going to use. What I'm going to do is I am going to pull specific features out to do the prediction. So let me close this up. Let's pretend we went through this and we now know what we want to use and for how much and for how long. Okay, so I got to hurry up because I'm going to run out of time. So now we need to do the yak shaving part. So we're going to do some data transformation. And the data transformation that we're going to do is called, there it is. We're going to do this project columns thing. Because we want to take some columns out, or we want to specify which columns we want to use, okay? So I'm going to take this, and I'm going to move it like so. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to this launch column selector thing to pick the columns that we want to use to use in our machine learning problem. So I'm going to start with no columns, and then I'm going to add some columns. So we're going to use age, education, because final weight we didn't like, age, education, marital status, relationship, sex, race, and income is what we wanted to predict, so we're going to pull that out. So I'll hit OK. All right, so now that we've done that, we need to see what that looks like. What does that look like? So notice I came down here and I ran it. And then up here, notice you have the clock thing going, and it's been queued, and now it looks like it's running. All right. By the way, the more things we add, the longer these experiments take. So please get ready with your questions, because otherwise, right. Now that it's done, take a look at this. When I visualize the data set, you can see now we have just the things that we're going to focus on. So this is the yak shaving part. It's in Azure. The other thing that's cool that I didn't tell you is, what if there's missing values? So let me go to, we don't want to do that one. Well, let me show you just some of the ones. Like, for example, apply filter is a way of saying, I want to clip the values at a certain range. Or, for example, here's another one. Remove duplicate rows. So if there's a row that's duplicate, remove it just for me, right? So notice that these things that you put on there are for transforming your data into a usable state. It's all up there already. Okay. In our case, what we want to do is we want to tell the system a little bit about this data. And so we've got to modify what's called the metadata. So let's go to metadata editor. We'll drop this down, and what we're going to do is we're going to pull some stuff in. So we're going to launch the column selector. We're going to begin with no columns. We're going to select age, education, marital status, relationship, race, and sex, because we want to tell it that these are the things we're going to use to predict. Remember, what are those things called usually in machine learning? They're called features. And we're going to make them categorical. Categorical means not numerical or not continuous, so it's going to do, you see what I'm saying? Age, I probably should do another one to make it just numerical, but I'm just going to punt because we're running out of time. So, but you know what we're talking about here. So there you go. We have the features there set up. And now what we need to do is we need to go in there and say, okay, what is the label? So I'm going to drop another metadata on there, editor metadata on there, and I'm going to go and launch the column selector. Notice that when I try to pick columns, it doesn't let me. That's because I got to run it again, but I don't want to. Okay, so I'm just going to type it in this time. So I am going to include the column income, and I'm going to click OK. I'm going to change the column name to class just because that's what I want to do. And these are the labels, and we're going to make these categorical, and now I'm going to run. You see what I did? All I'm doing right now is I'm telling it which ones are the features, which one is the label. That's all I'm doing. Before, if you want, there's other things you can do to transform your data. Like if there's a missing value, replace it with a zero, or replace it with X or whatever. And so there's a lot of other things. You can apply filters. There's feature selection ability. But there's a lot of things that you can drag on there to just do the data cleansing. Okay, so now that we have our metadata editor, now we have our editor there, let's go and see what it looks like. You can see that now we have categorical set up, and then this is set as a categorical label. All right. So now let's pretend that we've cleansed our data. Now, before I do that, remember, as I go to step three, which is the model, you might have to go back and fix step two, right? That's okay. That's why these things are called experiments, and you can keep trying, okay? All right, so let's go over here, and let's start to do the machine learning thing. First, how do we know how well it's doing? We have to split the data. I have to do that. So let me show you how you do that. So let me go over here, and let me find split data. Here it is. So split, I'll bring this over here to the left. We're going to have 0.8. And there you go. So now we split the data. On the left-hand side here, we're going to have the 0.8. And over here, we're going to have the 0.2. So now it's time to build a model. So let's go over here and let's minimize these ones. And let's go to machine learning, right? Now let's go to this thing called initialize model. Sorry, we want to train a model. So let's go here and let's drag train model. Okay. So we're going to drop this right here to the left because we're training a model. And the left-hand thing side that's coming in is what model do we want to use? Well, we happen to have learned about a couple of models. So here are some of them. Remember, there's classification and regression. This one that I didn't talk about is the unsupervised learning problem. We could do that some other time. So let's go to classification, and let me see if I can never, there we go. Oh, okay, notice, how many of those do you know already? A good deal, right? The others are similar. So we talked about neural networks, we talked about support vector machines, we talked about forest jungle decision tree and perceptron, right? You can see there's multi-class versions of some of those as well. Logistic regression I did not talk about. It's similar to the other. Really, machine learning is just glorified counting when it comes down to it, right? It's glorified counting. I think the only one we didn't cover was logistic regression and Bayes classification, which we can talk about some other time. So we've got stuff in there. So let's. Which one do you want to do? Oh, I thought everyone left. All right, I'm going to do class neural network because nobody cares about which one we do. And I'm going to do that. Notice that we have some parameters over here. Number of hidden nodes, what's those things? Those are the things in the middle, right? You can put those in there. We don't need that many. You know what? No, let me do the perceptron one, because that one's the one that we understood the most, right? Because it's just a line. So there's the two class perceptron. There's the learning rate is how fast do we move the line, and iterations is how many times do you want to do it. So simple, right? You can see every one of these machine learning algorithms has what's called a hyperparameter. Okay, now I'm running out of time. So let's go to score model, because we want to see how the model does. So we'll drop this over here. And then this is the 20% that we use to do the scoring. You see how this is shaping up? It's super simple. And then finally, we need to evaluate the model to see how it does. So let's go to, where's the evaluate model? It's up here. So evaluate model, we'll do it like that. And whenever there's something wrong, there's going to be this little thing. What's wrong? Well, we didn't tell it what it needs to learn, right? So we're going to go to launch column selector, and we're going to choose class, because that's what we changed it to, and now we can run it. All right, so it's running now. Any questions? What's that? Good question. A couple hundred thousand. I don't know. I might go back. Maybe it's 32,000. I want to over-exaggerate. Maybe it's 2. I don't know, but we'll go look in a second. Okay. Notice these things start to sort of work themselves out as they go. Yes, sir.
Are their classifiers usually perform better than others in particular problems?
Yeah, he's saying some classifiers perform sometimes better than others. How do we know which one is going to do better on your data set? Science. The other question was how many records are in the data set? We'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, it's done. Okay, how well did it do? Let's take a look. It did that well. Well, what the heck do these numbers mean? Well, I'll show you right now. Just a reminder, the steps, I was going to show this before, but I forgot. Those are the steps. We're right now at step number 3 to evaluate the model. Here it is. This is called the confusion matrix, and it has to do with the fact that we need to use the term matrix as often as possible as data scientists, number one, and number two, because there's really 4 different things that are happening. There is the truth, whether something is really true or really false, and then there's what we guess. Those are different things. So if something is true and we guess positive, it's a true positive. This is right. If something is false and we guess true, it's a false positive. The combination of these is called precision. Yeah? It tells you, because are you more interested in being positive or being negative? Because that's what recall is. Right? There is stuff that we guess that's true that really is true, true positive, and stuff that we guess that is false that is actually true. That's when you come them all together, it's called recall. All together, it's called accuracy. How accurate are we all together? Do you see that? That's probably the best diagram. In fact, if you go to Wikipedia about the confusion matrix, there's other measures all over the place, but they're all mathematical analogies of each other that you can convert from one to the other mathematically. These are probably the ones that are used the most. And so when we look at recall and precision, recall is how negative we are. Precision is how positive we are about it. Notice that when we go back, you can start to see what's going on. If we're just interested in accuracy, 80% is really good. 50%, you might as well use a random number generator. Right? That's really bad. Like, you could flip a coin, and that would be just as good as your whatever machine learning algorithm. Okay? 80% is good. 95%, something's not quite right. There's something in there that you should be like, oh, this is actually really accurate. More science, right? I mean, something's weird, right? Maybe you're overfitting, etc. But you can see that recall and precision are in there. So it looks like we're getting better positive than we are negative. F1 score is the harmonic mean between recall and precision. Whatever that means. right? It's just like an average of them, but a special kind of average, right? And so that's what that's telling you, right? There's other scores in there that we just don't have time because I really have only 1 minute. Okay, so now that we've done this, let me show you craziness number two. I'm going to do Control C and Control V and move this over. And then I'm going to drop this over here. And then I am going to take this off. Oops, dang it. I did it too fast. So Control C, Control V over here. I only want to delete this, right? Because we're going to do another, we're going to do a two-class decision forest instead. And then we're going to do a score model like this. And now we can compare two models at the same time. Science! Isn't that cool? You can cut and paste all the way down. This is more exciting to me than you, isn't it? All right, well, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to move over to my playground workspace and show you how you actually use these in real life. So we're going to go to the Income One experiment. Remember, this is the same thing we had before. But now, when you actually want to deploy the machine learning algorithm, you go to this Income One deploy. You literally right-click on this, you set as an input, and you set this as an output. Input, output. And then what you do is you go to this button that says Publish Web Service. Not only that, you can actually save the model that you trained. And I saved it. Because what happens is when you run it again, if the web service is running again, it's going to build the whole thing again. But you want to save the model. So you can save the model and do it again. And then once you do that, notice that you have this thing called a web service. So here is the Income One deploy. You can actually test it. You can fill stuff in, and it will give you the answer. But boy, wouldn't it be great if you had like code that you could actually put inside of your application? That would be really good. You see that? That is, to me, amazing. That you could use the power of the cloud without constraints on memory or CPU to run as many machine learning algorithms as you want, to do any kind of prediction that you want, and then expose it like that. Your website. If you're a banker, you could build a predictive algorithm to know if these people are going to default on their loan and tell them, yeah, we're not interested in you. Right then, before you even go through the process of wasting money with someone else's time. That's, to me, a pretty amazing thing. All right, so I have a couple of slides here left over. We did that. My name is Seth. I work for DevExpress. I'm going to be down there at the booth. We have a DevExpress booth. Come and see me if you'd like. Those are my information, so feel free to get a hold of me. If you're interested in this talk, I also did it at AzureConf, except it was not as interactive because it was on video. You can go to azureconf.net and watch the other version. And then there's some slides that they told me to show you. I haven't seen them yet. Yeah, this is good. Good job. And then, oh, look at that. This is great. And yes, evaluations are important. Yeah, my mom couldn't be here, otherwise I would have had one good evaluation. And so, again, thanks for coming.